Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee. The latest on the Two Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut up, Ter.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, back in the saddle once again. You are now rocking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. Welcome to Talking with TD. We got a loaded show. Man, listen, you know, you want the inside scoop, we're going to bring that to you. We got Diana Russini of The Athletic, the NFL insider, coming in. We're going to get her take on Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel, the whole situation, the coaching search. That's going to be a fire segment. You already know. We got David James over here.
Yes, sir.
Making it happen, mixing the music, mixing the quotes. This is what we do. Run TMC with Chris Sanders. The old fisheye fool is coming up in a little bit. And we got you, the listeners. And I appreciate each of you, man. It's all love. All love. As DeAndre Hopkins would say, love all, serve all. That's what we're here to do, man. And, man, I just can't tell you. It's really, really great to be back talking shop, man. This is something that, you know, you identify as a part of you. And that's how I feel, you know, when you love something that you do. So I'm not going to get all soppy and emotional. We're going to talk some shop because I know you guys didn't tune in to hear that. You tuned in to hear about this head coaching search. And my goodness, this Titans team is casting a large net. 10 candidates have been requested to interview. They've interviewed 4. And, oh, Dan Graziano with a couple nuggets that he dropped on Wednesday. Brian Callahan, the guy who they interviewed first, is now the guy that they're going to request, or they have requested a second interview with, an in-person one. We know those can't happen. And just for clarity, folks, January 21st is, up until then, you can't have any in-person interviews. So I know a lot of people have said, well, why are they having virtual interviews? And some have gone to the extent, to blame it on Rand Carthon. I mean, like, you know, it seems like Rand is responsible for the snow that fell this week. You know, homelessness.
Everything's all Rand's fault.
Poverty. Like, it's Rand's fault. It's just crazy to me how one man could be so criticized the way that he is. But that's a different conversation for another day. I will say this, though. When you look at the search, okay, Brian Callahan is someone that I'm going to get into a little bit later. Also, Thomas Brown. But so you have Thomas Brown set the interview on Thursday. You already interviewed Brian Callahan, Mike Kafka, Mike McDonald, Antonio Pierce. Look, Antonio Pierce is probably going to get that Raiders job. You saw what Max Crosby posted, and you've heard what Devontae Adams said. I think it would be wrong to not hire him as the coach. So I think he's out of the picture, in my opinion. The other 6 that are remaining are, you have Ben Johnson, Brian Johnson, as I mentioned, Thomas Brown. You have Dan Quinn. Let's continue to roll through this. Bobby Slowick, who was obviously, he's a hot name, a hot ticket. And, of course, you know, when you look at the ties that he has to Rand Carthon, 6 years together in San Francisco, we know the 49ers are one of the best-run organizations, if not the best. The Ravens probably have something to say about that.
And yes, sir.
Your Ravens, David, have a good argument there. But we know that the Titans are looking to emulate that model, right, that was used as far as the collaboration, the teamwork, et cetera, that has happened between Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and, to an extension, D'Amico Ryans, who's obviously in Houston, and Rand Carthon, and Adam Peters, who is the GM of the Washington Commanders now. Congratulations to him for getting that job. He turned the opportunity down to interview here last year. But nevertheless, Slowick is a very good candidate. Now, I've gathered some information about him, and a lot of people said that he's not ready. I thought it was interesting, David, because I asked about the offense and just, you know, how the guys respond to him. And what I was told from someone who talks to a lot of the players and deals with a lot of them, that it's not all like, hey, Bobby Slowick is the magician, he's the end-all, be-all for this success. A lot of the players are like, hey, man, like, we have a big tie in this. It is a player's league, and the coach, his responsibility is put the guys in position to make plays. Whether or not they make the plays is up to the player. So I see both sides of that argument. I think Bobby Sloat would be a solid candidate. I just want to dig in a little bit more about his leadership ability, right? Because, you know, obviously, you know, that's something that's very important, especially to an organization like this that was under such stellar leadership with Mike Vrabel. And we know there were issues, and we'll get into that, you know, with Diane Rossini a little bit later. But Slowick is definitely a viable candidate. Now, Dan Quinn, he has a little bit of explaining to do after that performance, you know, from the defense against the Packers. But he has past experience. And if I'm not mistaken, he's the only coach outside, obviously, Antonio Pierce, who has interim experience, that has previous head coach experience. So, hey, we'll see what happens there. I don't know how that process is going to continue. We do know Dan Graziano. He came out with the news that Aaron Glenn is a leading candidate, or like, you know, a strong candidate, rather. Not leading, but a strong candidate. He did come out with that. And then he also on Wednesday said that Brian Callahan has been contacted for a second interview. Now, we'll see what happens there. Obviously, with me and any of you who heard me on the TD Power Hour, or even with Robbie and Rex Road on Wednesday, you know that I'm a very big advocate for Brian Callahan. I believe that he would be the best option. And you look at this guy, you know, you're talking about 19, 20, 21, 22, 25 years of coordinating experience. And last time I checked over the time, obviously the first year Bengals were so and so, but in four of those 5 years, this offense has been one of the top offenses in the league. I mean, this offense is one that has been able to beat the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City and go to the Super Bowl. Now, obviously, players are a big part of that, right? You got Tyler Boyd, who, if Callahan comes to the Titans, Tyler Boyd's a free agent. Natural transition for him. Obviously, T. Higgins is the preferred choice, but I don't think he gets out of Cincinnati due to the franchise tag. But you do have that. You also look at just what they've been able to do with this offensive line, right? They've had issues on the offensive line, but Callahan has still found a way to be successful. I know. He's not the play caller. This is true. But trust me, he is incredibly critical to the installation of the offense. He's incredibly critical to how everything is executed. And here's a good example of what I like about Brian Callahan, okay? You go to, I believe it was week 6 this past season, and I've said this before, I'm going to say it again because it deserves emphasis, right? Week 6, they beat the Seahawks 17-14. They got the victory, David. They got the W. Like, they won the game. A lot of people say, hey, you won the game, you did what you were supposed to do. Not Brian Callahan. They were going into the bye week. They get back before the bye week. He lit into the offense. Why? Because they got 214 total yards. He did not like that. So he laid into the guys. He said, I'm gonna give you this tongue whipping, this tongue lashing. Take that with you over the break. Guess what happened? They come back from the break. Laid into them again. Right? You know what they did in the game coming off the bye week? They went to San Francisco and dropped 33 on the 49ers. Now, you and I both know, if it's not Baltimore, it's San Francisco. That's the measuring stick. Hey, that's what he did. Oh, and by the way,
impressive.
Joe Burrow went down, recalibrated. All of a sudden, Jake Browning out of Washington.
He looked pretty dang good.
They were still in the mix for a bit. So I think Brian Callahan is the guy. You obviously look at the work that he's done with quarterbacks, right? He's worked with going back to Peyton Manning. So, you know, in those days with Gary Kubiak, who's a direct descendant of the Mike Shanahan offense, you know, he played for him and he also coached for him. So that's something, a tie, right? Mike Shanahan dating back before Kyle Shanahan. Obviously, you know, it was handed down. So you have that. He worked with Manning, as I mentioned, with Matthew Stafford, with Derek Carr, as well as Joe Burrow. I think you want somebody who has proven to be good with quarterbacks. So you have that. Then you also look at just the philosophy. And, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'll let Brian Callahan himself tell you a little bit about his philosophy. I found this on Locked On Bengals. Those guys do an awesome job, and they actually managed to get the Bengals OC on the show and talk to him 2 episodes for 20-plus minutes. But here's a quick excerpt from that.
You always look around the league, and you have defensive coordinators, and they always talk about, you know, surviving the early part of the game. And that's, I think, a tendency for all play callers at every NFL team, is that there's a handful of things that you put out early and you try to see how they're going to play it, and you try to come to whatever is going on early on. You spend a little more time on that process. You walk through that usually at least another extra time or two, and so there's a lot more attention paid to it as you get into the game and the flow of the game. Sometimes you get back to the things that you know and trust. There is a comfort level with certain schemes and certain play calls from the quarterback to the play caller. I think that's it's almost a natural progression of things for a lot of guys. And the key is how do you balance that? How do you continue to push the envelope of what you're doing formationally, schematically, and then settling in on things that you feel like you can go execute in a pressure moment. And I think you've seen over the years for us, when we've gotten into some tight spots and big moments, most of those things are what the quarterback feels best about executing, and he tends to make those things work. And that's just how we're built a little bit with Joe, and then how he plays with our receivers. That part has proven effective for us, and particularly when you talk about the end of the Kansas City games, you know, both the one at home and the playoff games. You know, there's the tried and true element, the bread and butter of we know these are going to be plays that Joe can execute. And then you have to balance that with, you know, new schematic thoughts that might be things that you don't have as much confidence in, but the potential is a lot higher for them to, the risk and the reward are a little bit higher on both ends.
I like what he's saying there too, because you also, he went further to talk about tendencies, and he discussed working with Tom Moore and just how, you know, tendencies are a good thing. Like, it's not bad to have them, but you have to be able to work off of that. And he gave the example of T. Higgins, right, running a slot fade and finding success there, and then doing things off of that where he has the same release, and then he throttles down and works his way back to the quarterback on a fade stop, you know, and then releasing outside and making a move and coming back in on a route across the middle as defenses begin to account for that vertical side of things that Higgins brought. I thought that was really good to mention that. I love how he talked about going with what you do best in the toughest situations. And that's true. Like, hey, you could know what I want to do, but if I do it well enough to the point where it's successful, I'm going to go to that anyway. And it's just, you better stop it. And when you make steps to stop it, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to have a variation off of it. So I like that he had that part of it. In my opinion, like I said, he's the guy. But there's another one that emerged, and that's Thomas Brown. And he obviously was the Panthers' OC last year. And I it's disturbing, right? Because I see when his name is mentioned, the quick response is always the Rooney Rule, and, you know, miss me with that. This guy is very qualified, right? He has the Willy Wonka ticket, and that ticket is – working with Sean McVay. We know all you had to do was ride on the elevator with McVay, and you're a candidate for a head coaching position. I say that jokingly, but when you look at Thomas Brown, okay, so he was OC in the past, right, with Miami. He played ball. He had a stint in the league, a short one. I know that he is familiar with Rand Carthon. They know each other. He actually started out as a strength and conditioning coach, which is very interesting because we know there's a huge issue with the Titans and how things have been over the past 3 seasons. I'm very curious how responsive, or not even responsive, because I know that he would respond well to it, but I'm curious like how that would happen as far as the analytical models that Chad Brinker has, because Chad Brinker has a model for everything analytically, and he talked about the injury one a bit when he first spoke to the media. So you have that tie. But getting back to the McVay part of things. So he got in there as a running back coach. Soon after being a running back coach, he was elevated to assistant head coach, right? So Sean McVay not only believed in him to hire him. And, oh, by the way, you look at these guys, they have ties dating back to high school, which is interesting. So it's not just like a run-of-the-mill relationship. They followed each other's career. And it's funny because they actually played against each other back in high school in Georgia, right? And I think that's interesting that they were able to keep the relationship going and continue. And, oh, by the way, while he was in L.A. with Sean McVay, this guy named Liam Cohen was on the coaching staff. And if you will love Will Levis, right, you Will Levis lovers, you know what Levis did with Liam Cohen. So he could bring Cohen aboard as the offensive coordinator and, you know, Deuce Staley. Like, you want a guy, you want energy, and you want, you know, that leadership aspect. You want to complement yourself with Deuce Staley, awesome running back coach. Obviously, it didn't work out in Carolina for whatever reason. But now you could bring him in as a running back coach. And I think when you look at those things, and then you got the time that he worked with Josh McCown. So you want to build, like, I remember in Philly, I called Carson Wentz's situation a QB incubator because he had John DeFilippo, Frank Reich, Doug Peterson. You had Press Taylor in there. These are all guys, you know, very familiar with the quarterback position. In the case of Reich and Peterson, they played in the league. DeFilippo played in college. So you have those. And Press Taylor, that's Zach Taylor's younger brother. So, you know, that's something else to look at. I call it a QB incubator. And that's kind of what you could develop here in Nashville, right? Because you bring in Josh McCown, whether it's your QB, not QB coach, because Charles London deserves that role, and pass game coordinator. But you bring McCown in a role similar to what Pat O'Hara has. If you don't bring Pat O'Hara back, you know, that's something. And then Jim Caldwell, an offensive advisor. That's what I would have him aboard. So now you have that guy who's been there and done that as a head coach. He could help you, you know, offensive assistant/assistant head coach. That's the way I would build the staff out. And you got Liam Cohen. And, hey, you know what? If things go well and Liam Cohen moves on, that's fine. You still have your ideology there. You still have your scheme there because you're an offensive guy. Thomas Brown, that is. And I think, you know, he's a very slept upon candidate. And I'm not going to continue to talk about him. I want to give him a chance to tell you guys. This was his opening press conference in Carolina when he first got the OC job. Check it out.
Identity-wise, I kind of broke it down into 3 points. First is about being physical at all 11 positions. That for myself and this offensive staff is really kind of a non-negotiable when it comes to our approach, our attack to the game. Number two was a team that would not beat themselves. Because oftentimes, as we know, more games are lost than they are won. So turnovers, eliminating the penalties, and also doing a really good job of understanding how to have great clarity so we don't have missed assignments on offense. And then lastly was about identifying on our offense the playmakers, right? Find, exploit, and win in matchups. That's kind of identity-wise. But philosophy-wise, would you ask me, I kind of break it down as far as number one is the ball is the issue. So taking great care of the football, that's the ball carriers, the offensive line being involved up front, the tailback from a play pass protection standpoint, but also receivers being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there as far as route distribution goes. Number two is everything starts up front. That physical mentality again, how we're kind of building upon what those guys did last year, camping that crew, doing a really good job of setting the tone mentality-wise, and everything kind of builds off of that system as far as the keepers, the play pass, and obviously the drop back game as well. Number three would end up being the losing of complexity. So marrying the run and the pass, trying to create chaos for the defense while keeping it simple for us is a thought process that we have as an offensive staff. And then being able to do a really good job of pick and choose your spots to attack with tempo. So you got to earn the right to use tempo with early down efficiency. And finally, just that fifth point, it is situational masters. So third down first, where it starts first, winning first and second down, so you can be in third and manageables. But 2 minute end of the half, end of the game, as well as scoring points in the red zone, so touchdowns in the red zone, as well as game plan and 4 minute offense.
I like it. I like the explanation. It starts up front, and you know that's something that's critical to realize, and it seems like that's what he has. So, yeah, I mean, I like Thomas Brown as a candidate a lot. I mean, obviously, you know, I've talked about Callahan, you know, and where I am there, but I tell you, Thomas Brown is someone that he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves, and that's 100% right. And I know a lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, look at Carolina's offense last year. You're right. The offense was bad, but they were a team in transition, okay? And that's A. And then B, this says a lot about Thomas Brown. He never met Frank Reich from a can of paint before they interviewed, but he got the job. Now, a part of that was, you know, kind of merging his concepts with Reich's concepts. And you know what happens when things go left, right? You go with what you're familiar with. And that's exactly what Frank Reich did. They didn't get off to the best start. Obviously, you know, things went wrong. And he said, well, you know what? I got to go with what I know. And that's what he did. And it still wasn't good enough. And it ended up resulting in Frank Reich being fired. Thomas Brown got play calling duties. There were a couple of games where they did have some success. Thomas Brown was the play caller in those games. So I get it from the macro level, right? It looks like, you know, he is coming from a bad scheme, which he is, right? But he's not fully responsible for that. Thomas Brown, I think, would be a very, very good candidate. We'll see what happens with these interviews. So I just wanted to unload the clip a little bit, talk about a couple guys that I really liked, and go over some of the candidates that I know you guys like, right? Bobby Slowick. Mike McDonald would be intriguing. He better bring Chuck Smith with him because he's a guy that the pass rush master. We've had him on Talking with TD before. But, yeah, so we're going to keep this thing rolling. We'll be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run, run, TMC.
For who?
For you. For you. Fresh. 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 Fresh.
Right as the music fades, the lights dim. And now, coming to you live from the Philadelphia Spectrum, as small forward. For your 76ers out of Villanova, number 3, Tim Thomas.
And now, starring for the Houston Rockets, Ralph Sampson.
No, microphone, afro, and everything.
Had a little bitty shorts with the high socks. Remember them socks your mom used to make you wear with the blue, the white, and the red? Come on, man.
Yeah, I said number 3. Dad Gorman was number 1. My bad. I got Iverson on the mind.
Hey, before we start the show, man, hey, I wanted to commend the man that you are. You know, we all make mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. But the one thing that I love about you, TD, is you're a stand-up guy. You know, you stand up and say, yo, I made a mistake, and you're going to learn from it. So, man, I just want to let all the listeners know he's one of the best on the radio. He's a great friend of mine, but the most of all, he's one of my brothers. And I just want to tell you, the whole fan base, that I love you, brother.
Yeah, no, I love you too, and I appreciate that. And, I mean, the approach is there's no mistakes, only lessons. And so
absolutely, man.
When we have shortcomings, I think the major thing is to learn from it. And I vow to learn from that, be better from this. And people will see. And I just hope that a lot of the people who had some things to say,
right,
some slick things, I hope you have the same energy when you see the things that I do.
Absolutely.
In the near future. And we're going to work to atone and get this thing corrected.
Yeah, but you know the good thing about this, TD, I'm not trying to prolong this thing, but you have a chance to help somebody else.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Me and you talk off the air all the time that we as men struggle with things, but we don't have nobody to talk to. And with this situation, you know, guys are going to come to you that you're going to be able to talk to help them through the process because you had to go through the process. So, man, hey, you know, sky's the limit. We about to crush this show and let's go get it. But you still look like Sam Cassell. I ain't let you get off of that. You still look like Sam Cassell.
Hey, listen, I'd rather look like Sam Cassell than Tyrone Hill, man. I mean, they're both
cold,
not the best looking guys, but
that's cold,
you know,
man,
you can't go.
So what's up with these Titans, man? Vrabel gone? You know, is the coordinator going to be gone? Who's going to be the – I mean, what the heck is going on, man?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's the thing that I think we do need to get into, because with sure. Mike Vrabel being gone, obviously there's no telling what's going to happen with the coaching staff. Shane Bowen interviewed for the Jaguars, and he will be interviewing for, I believe, the Giants job as well. So you have that coming up. I don't know what's going to happen with Tim Kelly, but – I don't know. Were you around? Like, did you work through? You never experienced a coaching change, right?
Well, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because when I was with the Tennessee Titans, Jerry Rome was my offensive coordinator. Then Les Steckel, my receiver coach, went in that position. So you have a lot of coaches changes. But the one thing as a player, you just got to adapt to it. I know everything's the same. Everybody runs a seven route. Everybody runs a curl. Everybody runs a go route. Everybody runs an out route. But the verbiage is different. You just got to get the verbiage down, and whatever coach they bring in, you just got to understand how he wants it ran. That's the only thing. So you may have different coaches or different people coming in, but at the end of the day, you just understand his way of doing it, but it's still basically the same.
Gotcha. And I'm glad you took it there. I was talking about head coaching change, but still, yeah. With the head coaching change, you know, comes the OC change, and that's something yeah. that is going to be in the target right here for this team, because Will Levis could potentially be playing in his fourth offense in 4 years, and that obviously would be tough. But how difficult is it to make that transition? You mentioned the verbiage. Obviously, yeah. that's something. But how tough is it to make that transition?
You know, it all depends on who's your head coach and who's your offensive coordinator. I mean, as a player, I don't think it's really tough with the verbiage, because every route's the same. Everybody runs a route tree. It's just the philosophy of whoever you bring in. Say if they go get, you know, Bobby Slowick from the Houston Texans, you know, and say before I had Les Steckel as my offensive coordinator. My offensive coordinator may have me lie with my eyes, but, you know, Bobby Slowick will have me do something different with keeping my eyes straight, but I'm still running the corner route. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, it's not about just the X and O's. It's about how that specific coach wants a specific play ran. So when you have it like that, you just got to get to know your coach. You got to sit him down and say, you know what, okay, what do you want from me? How do you want me to run this route? How do you want me to block? How do you want me to prepare? And once you get the concept and his philosophy, then now you can actually build on how he wants you to build.
Yeah, and I know, you know, you mentioned the X's and O's, and that's important, right, especially for the coordinator. But as the head coach, like, that's where it starts, this whole decision-making and everything.
True.
The decision is on the head coach. How much emphasis should be pointed to, okay, what type of leader is this guy? How does he get guys to respond?
You know, a lot of people get on Jeff Fisher, and Jeff Fisher, you know, because he didn't win the Super Bowl, you know, we didn't win the Super Bowl, and then we lose to Baltimore the following year. So everybody says he wasn't a great coach, and then he goes to the L.A. or the Rams, and he's unsuccessful. But I think Jeff Fisher is one of the best coaches I've ever been around, and let me tell you why. The reason why I say that is the way he responds to players. You got to remember, a long time ago, he played for the Chicago Bears. He was a returner. He looked bad in his uniform. But the one thing I love about Jeff Fisher is he understands the player. We always talk about a coach being a player's coach. Right. What the heck does that mean? He understands the player. He understands how he ticks. He understands when to put the pads on and when not to put the pads on. He talks to players. I remember in 1996, my second year, and we were getting blasted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, like 35-0 in the first half. We were getting blasted. So as a leader, Jeff Fisher huddles up the whole team. Instead of screaming and yelling, y'all need to do this. Offense need to do this. The defense need to do this. But this is what he does. He said, guys, just do what we did in practice. It's just like a boat. You just got to ride the wave and get back into the game. Now you look up, it's 35-28. Now you look up, it's 35-35. We lost the game, but we still had a chance to win. Why? Because of the leader that Jeff Fisher was.
Yeah, and that leadership part of it is so, so important.
It's very, very important.
When you look at these candidates, I don't know how much work you've done on them, but, you know, and what you have done,
sure.
Do you have anybody that you feel is best suited?
I like Bobby Slowick. And the reason why I like him is, yeah, and I like him and I like Antonio Pierce. They're kind of two different guys. You know, Bobby's more like mild mannered, but you got Antonio Pierce that'll bite your ear off because he played with the Giants for 9 years. So he has that tenacity. He brings that makes you want to run through a wall. Uh-huh. But then you have Bobby Slowick that's more of a teacher, more of a calm guy in the midst of a storm. So, you know, I like those two guys because they bring a little something to the table. You got Bobby that's a teacher. You got Bobby that's more like a, you know, instructional guy. But then you have Antonio Pierce that said, you know what, we run it through a wall. It's us against the world. So whoever you get, they got to make sure that the team adapts to the culture that you're building.
Right. And that's my question, though, with Slowick. From what I gathered, you know, there were questions about the leadership and uh-huh. a lot of the players, right? They said that, hey, I mean, this offensive success, like the scheme is good, but hey, man,
yeah,
like it's because of us. So when you hear those things, like you don't have any questions about the leadership or, and it's obviously not knowing them, it's hard to come to that conclusion, but you know, you don't have any questions about that?
No, I don't, because here's what you do. I remember Bobby Bowden said this. He said, I'm a head coach, but I hire the best coaches to manage my team. So if I'm in his position, all I do is get the best coordinator, the best defensive coordinator, the best offensive coordinator, and manage the team. Because I know Jeff. Well, I just talked about Jeff Fisher a minute ago. Jeff Fisher was a great motivator, but I wasn't around him every day. I was around my position coach. So you got to get people. You got to get people or different coaches that are in, that have your same identity, that has the same DNA as your head coach. So if your head coach has a fiery attitude like Tomlin, they're going to follow suit because everybody has that DNA. So if I'm ever a head coach, I'm hiring the best coaches that has my DNA and make it flourish throughout the whole team.
That makes 100% sense. So let me ask you this, though. This is a roster, right? 23 free agents.
Sure.
They have between 70 and 80 million, depending on who you check with. In cap space, they have a young quarterback on a rookie contract. When you look at all of this, you hire the coach comes in, and a few of these coaches, I've seen them talk about the importance of building your scheme around the players.
Yeah.
But how do you approach that when you have this roster that's so incomplete?
You know, it is incomplete, and I think that when they get the head coach, this is what you got to do because, you know, and I'm going to brag on my head coach at Montgomery Bet Academy. His name is Coach Uberon. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I love him is even though he's the head coach, he invites everybody in. He invites the receiver coach, which is myself. He invites the offensive line coach. He invites the defensive coach and say, okay, this is the identity of our team, but I need your help. And that's the same thing when you have when you're building a roster. Whoever head coach you bring in, you say, yes, I'm the head coach, but I need your help, Rand Carthon. I need your help, Amy Shrunk, so we can build and draft the identity of our team. Because whoever head coach you bring in, he's got to talk to Amy Shrunk. He's got to talk to Rand Carthon and say, okay, look, this is my philosophy. This is my identity. This is the culture that I want to build. So now when you start drafting and look at the free agent wise, you say, okay, I want that guy because he fits the mold of the game. It's kind of like this, just having a puzzle. You put pieces together, but the only way that the pieces can get together is if it fits the mold. And that's what you have to do. When you have the identity of the team, you got to draft people that fit the mold of what you're building.
Yeah, that makes 100. That's it, right there. That's what it comes down to. We talk about fitting the mold, right? And a part of our fitting that mold offensively is Treylon Burks. When you look at him, some have said give up on him. Others have said, you know, give him a chance. I think, you know, give him a chance. But where are you with Treylon Burks?
I give him another chance. And whoever, I don't know if Rob Moore is going to be there. I don't know who's going to be there. If they get a head coach, they bring a different receiver coach is. But I remember this, and this is what helped me my rookie season. Is Les Steckel, I met him in the parking lot. He was the only guy there, and he said this. He said this to me because, you know, the other coaching staff wanted to get Antonio Freeman before me. That's the crazy part. And some other receivers, but Les Steckel wanted me. So he met me in the parking lot, and he said this. He said, nobody in this facility believes in you. Hmm. You got to come in here and prove it. And he said, guess what he said? He said, you don't have to do this alone. So if I'm looking at Traylon Burks and I'm his wide receiver coach, I'm going to sit him down and say, nobody in this organization believes in you, but I believe in you, and we're going to walk through this thing together. And if we walk through this thing together and you trust me and you work hard, you do everything I ask you to do, let's go get the Pro Bowl and try to get a Super Bowl. But the thing about it is, I got to build a relationship with him, make him believe, and then he's got to believe, and let's go tear this whole season out. That's how I approach it.
Is this offensive line fixable in an offseason?
I mean, it's going to have to be. I mean, there's a lot of things that's going to have to be changed. I mean, I don't know if Dillard's going to be. I don't know what they're going to do with Dillard. You got Brunskill. He's gone. I know he's gone. You got Brunskill. You got Hubbard. You got Petit Ferrer coming back. So you got a lot of guys, but you need some impact players. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. You look at the Indianapolis Colts, Quentin Nelson. He's a dog. You can build around him. So what you have now, you have Skoronski. That has the potential to do some great things. I don't know if you're going to play tackle or guard. You got a dude right there. So now you build the pieces around it, but you got to get guys to fit that mold, and that's going to be the key.
Yeah, and it's all about what that mold is going to be. And that's
the
head coach, that's his job to sell that dream that he has. On the flip side of the ball, the defense, I mean, you got Jeffrey Simmons, Amani Hooker.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So what do you do defensively? Like, do you look to bring in corners? You draft free agency? Yeah. What?
You need a leader in that secondary. You need a leader. When Byron was playing in his prime, who was the leader of that defense? I know everybody talks about Jeffrey Simmons and all that, but who was the leader of that defense?
KB.
KB was that dude. So you got to go in the draft. You got to find somebody that's established in a league that's going to be a leader of the secondary. Because if I asked you, who's the leader of the secondary when KB was gone? Nobody. There's nobody in the secondary that sticks out and say, he's that guy. Yeah, you know, guys make plays occasionally, but who's the leader of that defense? We just don't know. So if you're doing a free agency, or you got to find somebody to come in there and say, you know what, let me take hold of this that's ran by the hit by the bull and make this thing work.
All right, last question here. Is it true that you once played Gordon on Sesame Street?
Oh, my God. hey, let me ask you this. Is it true that when Theo Huxtable had to miss a day, did you use his stunt double?
I was. I used to have the shag and everything.
No, you didn't, man. But, hey, man, on another note, man, I was watching Breaking.
Ooh.
And this guy was breakdancing. And I'm like, man, who is this dude? And you know, my wife that was sitting next to me, because she's fine. She's like, boy, there ain't nobody as cute as you. Her name is Faith. Not Faith Dodd anymore. It's Faith Sanders. And she was like, hey, baby, guess what? I'm looking at Breaking, but I thought you said TD was on the radio. I said, baby, that's Boogaloo Shrimp.
Hey, you know what they say, right? The more you could do.
No, but on the flip note, man, my brother's back. I love you, man. I'm so honored. My wife on the side is Tickle Pig, that we're, you know, a Batman and Robin. Run TMZ is back at it again.
That's right. Love you too, man. Appreciate
love you, bro.
It.
Appreciate you, man. Bye.
This is Will Levis, and I'm talking with TD.
What's the 411, hon?
What's the 411, hon?
I got it going on.
Hey, yo, I got it going
on. All right, back from the break, talking with TD. You hear Mary J. and Grand Poopah, What's the 411? It's only right we use that song to bring in our next guest, because she absolutely has the 411 in all corners of the NFL. And that is, I almost said it, but I'll say The Athletic, their finest, Diane Russini, my former teammate over at ESPN, but still someone who I love dearly. Diana, how you doing?
Hi, teammate forever, man.
That's
We're
right.
all in this together at this point, man. Yeah, no, it's been great. You know, the last few weeks, even, it feels like, I feel like the Titans made changes 6 months ago compared to how much has gone on since then. But I understand there's a lot of action going on at the facility, and everyone's really excited. I know Titans fans seem really pumped about the next chapter here.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I want to get into. And before I do, I will say this. You and Joe Rexroad, that was a very informative, excellent story you guys did. in regards to the situation with Mike Vrabel and how we got here. I definitely want to shout you out for that. When we look at where this team is now, right, and just the search and how everything's going, I mean, was there a turning point specifically to get them to want to move on and have someone else take over?
Yeah, I feel like this has been building for about a year, and it really didn't take a hard, we'll call it right turn, left turn, depending on what you are, until probably December-ish, right after Thanksgiving, things really started to change. And obviously they weren't winning a lot of games, so it makes a lot of sense. And this entire year's as a whole always felt a little off. It felt a little different than the years past that I've covered them. And having conversations with people in the building, I mean, everyone always had a good attitude and the focus was always about winning and trying to get the most out of each other and out of everyone. And guys in the locker room always shared with me that they were just fighting and trying to figure it out, knowing that they were challenged. They didn't have the most robust roster at this point. But I know internally the thought is, all right, we got to just get through this year. We got to just figure out a way to win some games, keep the guys motivated, keep the locker room. And, you know, we'll get to the draft. We'll get to free agency where, you know, we have the third most amount of money in the NFL right now in the cap space to spend. But I think really in the end, T, what happened was, There was just a true lack of communication between ownership and this coaching staff. And obviously that's led by head coach Mike Vrabel. And just it's really just like any relationship. Once that starts breaking down, it all falls apart. So I do think it's one of those situations, though, that who knows, maybe down the line, you know, if we ever wind up getting an opportunity to do interviews with people connected to what we will call now the former regime, I bet it will be spoken of or reflected on as a time that was really good with some highs, some lows, and perhaps maybe some self-reflection could now lead them to a conversation where they thought that maybe things could have been different. Everyone could have just been a little bit better. But this is where they're at now, and Amy made a really, really difficult decision. That is the one thing that's been made clear to me over the last few weeks, was that this was not, this wasn't like she just woke up and said, you know what, I'm so mad at him, I'm so tired of him, he's out. This has been building.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because that was kind of the general opinion, was that it was a knee-jerk move, and I know from talking to people that it wasn't. Also in those conversations, what I was told was it kind of got to a point where it's like, okay, we can't continue to overwork to appease this side and forget about that side. Meaning, you know, the regime that's there now, well, that was there along with the new blood, the new innovative ideas and things that you brought in. In your conversations, was that what you got as well?
No, I didn't. I think that is some side. I think there's a side to this that wants, there's a narrative there that wants to get out, which is that the new regime has all these ideas and research and they wanted to apply it and the old regime was resistant to it. I really never got that information. And no one ever shared with me that this coaching staff was ever sat down and presented with ideas that came with resistance from Vrabel, from Tim Kelly, from Shane Bowen. If anything, especially when it came to analytics and situational football, you know, the Titans have done really well in that category over the years. In fact, as you know, I cover the rest of the league, and that's always brought up to me. Whenever I fly into other cities and, you know, coaches will ask me or even players will ask me like where I came from, like, oh, where are you coming from? Well, I'll say, oh, you know, I just stopped by Tennessee, or, hey, I just wrote a piece on Nashville. Whatever it is, it's always brought up. It's, man, they do a good job there. They do a good job. And, you know, even the day Vrabel was fired, talking to guys around the league who were just in absolute shock, just stunned that the Titans would do that, that was always one of the things that they held as something that they respected as, man, they didn't have a lot to work with. They made the best out of that, and they're a smart staff. So I am curious, and I'm actually excited to see some of these ideas that I've heard about since I wrote the piece from people in the organization still that say they have a lot of innovative thoughts for how to make this team better for the future. Because if they were able to move on from perhaps, you know, one of the better coaches in the league, they must have a great plan, and that should make Titans fans psyched.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of Titans fans, I noticed they have like that mentality. It's like when you're out somewhere and you approach a female that's pretty and she says, oh, I'm not interested. And the guy walks away and he's like, oh, you're not pretty anyway. Well, yes, she is. That's why you approached her. And I think that's what, you know, we're having now with Mike Vrabel, where a lot of fans are like, hey, well, he's not that good of a coach anyway. He's a really a darn good coach. Now, that being said,
such a great analogy, by the way, that is such a great way to put it. Yeah. And, you know, yesterday I was making dinner and I was listening to Derek on Bustin' with the Boys. I always just really love listening to Derek Henry interviews. Just, he's so great outside of the locker room, and that's not a shot at Derek, but I just appreciate his candidness and his thought process when he's a little bit more comfortable. And in that setting, you know, shout out to those guys. They did such a good job with him. And, you know, you hear it in their voices about, you know, when you hear from players that ultimate respect and almost even just still shock in their voices. And I think they recorded pretty close to when it was announced.
Yep.
I don't know. I think you listen to that and you think, well, that this is going to be a tough one to swallow for sure. And guys are going to move on. Everyone's going to move on. You know, the next person is going to come in here and there's going to really, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to be able to achieve because, you know, the respect that this coaching staff had was pretty, I feel like everyone was locked in on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we're talking to the Athletic NFL insider, Diana Russini, big shoes to fill for that next head coach. From your conversations across the league, is this a destination that is looked upon as like, hey, this is a desirable position?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, before Vrabel was fired, I had a lot of different people in the league reaching out to me, asking me for a sense of his future and what ownership was thinking because they want the job.
Mm.
Knowing, I think there's a very basic life element to it of a lot of people want to live in Nashville, right? It's an amazing city, as those listening know. And I think the idea that they are, yes, rebuilding, but the future is bright. And there's some building blocks here. There's a lot of people around the league who think Will Levis is the answer, and they have something to work with here. And obviously being on a rookie contract, if he does become you know, the answer is incredible. You can't lose. Mm-hmm. So I do believe, and then you look around, obviously, in the division, and this, I mean, actually, now that we're seeing Houston, it definitely changes a little bit here, but it makes it more competitive. But I think there's a lot of people who think that they can come in here and really turn this thing around and get the most out of it. So you saw already the list, you know, and recently, you know, Dan Graziano was just reporting that Brian Callahan has been brought in for a second interview as well. And we're going to hear about more of these coming up. I just think it's definitely a desirable place for coaches that are looking for a job.
You mentioned Callahan. That is, in my opinion, that is the guy. I did some research on him, but also Thomas Brown, and was really pleased with what I came away with him. But what I want to get back to, I want to get to Rand Carthon and just the conversations you had. How is he viewed across the league? Because there's stuff coming out. I don't know if it's from someone who previously worked there that's gone, like Ryan Cowden, or if it's from within the building. But there's this general perception that is being fed to some people in the media that Rand does not know what he's doing in there. And that even some have ventured to say that he's incompetent, which I totally disagree with.
It's such a harsh thing to say about someone when they have the job. They obviously were picked. He was picked by ownership, by the people that she trusts as well. and, you know, Rand Carthon is very respected around the league. He has fantastic relationships. He has really, I think, made a dent in some of the criticism through the draft. And, you know, I had mentioned in the draft, or excuse me, my piece that Ryan Cowden ran the draft board, mm-hmm. which is typical for regimes that are transitioning. And, you know, Ryan Cowden knew he was dead man walking, but he still worked every day and did his job. And he is a football psychotic human being. I don't think I've ever had a conversation with Ryan Cowden over the last 8 years or so and have talked about anything but football. All he wants to do is talk about players.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually odd sometimes. I'm like, Ryan, how are you? How is your family? How are your children? Like, he's here in New York advising the Giants. And even if anytime I do like a check-in to see how he's doing, because he lives pretty close to me, yeah, there's just like no conversation about anything. He's obsessed with football, right? So, and that's a compliment, I think, to him. And I think that's why he is also respected around the league. But in terms of Ran and leading the ship, he's competent. He can do this job. Of course there's going to be a learning curve. It's the first time he's ever done this job. He's got to step in some challenging positions. He's not going to be perfect in every press conference. So the criticisms, I think, have been really unfair, and I think everyone just needs to give him a little bit more time. And there were some around the league who thought that Amy should have given Vrabel and Carthon more time together, almost just like in any relationship, in any marriage. 1 year is not enough. But she obviously believes that his vision and what he can do is, you know, outweighs and is better and perhaps more productive than what Vrabel had in mind for the future of the team. So I think if fans are you know, reading my article or listening to Sports Talk Radio and feel like, man, we're being led by someone that is not good at GMing, I think they need to have a little bit more hope there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And I don't think, you know, Rome is fallen or anything like that. This is an organization that it can be put back together. Before we get you out of here, I want to revert back to Mike Vrabel, because you see so many interviews happening, and we know that he is one of the best coaches in the league. Is there anything to him not getting it? Like, he's not being connected to any of these vacancies.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I'm learning this, and I've been learning this over the years, but more now, in the general manager and head coaching positions, not every interview gets put out there. Mm. So I was just having a conversation with an organization about a candidate, and they volunteered a name of someone they're talking to that I hadn't seen anywhere. And they don't want me to report it because they're trying to keep everything in-house. But I believe, and I don't know this, I've not reached out to Vrabel's agent or Mike since, but or at least since this coaching search has really picked up. I do believe, though, he's talking to teams. It's just not out there yet. And I'm sure we will know next week if Mike Vrabel has been working behind the scenes. But I do know there is, from talking to some people close to him, there was some thought that he would take some time off, which really, that probably shocked me more than Mike getting fired. Hmm. The thought of him, and you've been around him for so long. I mean, he is type A, high energy, hot. I mean, he's one of those people, when you talk to him, he's thinking 17 things at once. And sometimes it can be rude because you're like, are you focused on what I'm saying right now? Because his brain is just built that way. He's just thinking all the time. So, look, if it's up to him, obviously he's got that option. If he wants to get paid to golf, gosh, I wish I could do that. But we'll see if he winds up popping up here on one of these jobs and see if maybe some more jobs open up, right?
Yeah.
This is just starting. I had a head coach who's up for a job, excuse me, a candidate who's up for a head coaching job text me, this is going to be a marathon. Stop trying to make this a sprint. So I think we should probably all take that advice.
Yeah, and it's so funny real quick that you mentioned how it seems like there's 1,000 things going on in his mind at once. And it really is that case, because sometimes you'll be talking to him or you'll ask him a question in a press conference and he'll come back after, like, he'll answer the question and then come back two answers later and be like, oh, yeah, and, you know, I didn't really want to mean that, you know, seem like I was, you know, overlooking your question. And then he'll go into a whole rant answering your question, two questions. It's just crazy, but you got to love Coach Vrabel. You got to love him.
Yeah, he was great. And much like you, I would say, you know, I had my two babies in 2 years. I did it quick and I had a lot going on. I will say, of all the head coaches in football, he was one of a few who really always asked me how I was feeling. Yeah. Never about the baby, but always like, how you doing? And I always appreciated that when I'd be on the sidelines. And I always just thought that was cool. He had so much going on and cared enough to just ask me. So, look, it's small, it's tiny, it's little, but sometimes it tells you a lot about who people are, you know? And I think whether you agree with every decision he made as a football coach, I think we both can agree he is a really good person.
Yeah, no doubt. And it takes a great person to recognize another great person, and you are a great person. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, and just that, you know, the conversations we've had, whether it was about football or not football. I appreciate you as a friend.
Of course, you're the best. You're the biggest heart, and I appreciate you. And I know the listeners can probably hear it in your voice how great of a dude you are. So good luck with everything. You continue to be a fantastic reporter, even though you know I want you in Philly. Someone needs to shake it up in there.
Hey, listen, you never know, but right now is a 615. So I appreciate you, Diana. So that's Diana Russini, the Athletic NFL insider. Man, it doesn't get much better than her. I tell you what, it doesn't get much better than having the opportunity to be back here, man. I appreciate the support from each and every one of you. It definitely, the posts on Twitter, the DMs, those didn't go unrecognized. I did my best to answer every single DM that was sent. And you know what? I appreciate those who had the slick comments on there too, because, hey, we need motivation, whether it's positive or negative. So thank you for making those comments. It's all up from here, man. David James, my guy over here, making it happen. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you, dog.
Hey, man, Chris Sanders coming on. Listen, I can't tell you how happy I am to be back in the mix. We're not going anywhere. We're staying right here. That being said, thank each of you for tuning in. Definitely make sure you check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.